Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, your Ben Jarofsky Show for Tuesday, February 18th is just moments away. But before we get into that, we got to thank the following unions for sponsoring this program. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 and District 8. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9 are sponsors. The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150 sponsor this program, as well as the Chicago Federation of Labor. Ben, let's hear that song of the day.
All right, let's just go with the one I had been singing. Tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree. Hey, it's been too... Who sang that song?
No one cares.
Frank, who sang? Dawn. Tony Orlando and Dawn. There you go. Thank you, Frank.
Do you want young people listening?
Yeah.
The Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. It is Tuesday, February 18th, and live from the Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is The Ben Jarofsky Show. Today on the program, our Chicago Reader colleague, Maya Dukmasova, returns. We welcome back political strategist Justin Horowitz, and we're talking all things Mardi Gras with the Mardi Gras man, Jimmy Banos. And now your host, not the Mardi Gras man, Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Hey, hello, everybody. We're calling this Breaking News Tuesday. That's the news breaking. And here's why.
Sounded like a power washer.
Good week. You have a good weekend, D?
Yeah, 2 days ago.
I had a good weekend. I saw The Assistant. So-so movie. Overrated. In fact, just don't. False advertising made me think it was going to be this real suspenseful thriller, and it was kind of boring. Anyway, saw the NBA All-Star Game. I went to my friend's house, drove up there. And while I was driving up there, D, I heard this song on the radio, an old Neil Young song I hadn't heard in years, Yes, Only Love Can Break Your Heart. And it was like, I hadn't heard this song in years. It's a line that goes, I have a friend I've never seen. He hides his head inside. And I thought they said tree. And so, like, for an hour, I'm like, why would he hide his head inside of a tree? And guess what, D? Turns out I misheard. It was dream. All right.
This is our opener, huh?
Yeah, man. I just had to get that out. Anyway, watch the NBA All-Star Game. And what I was stunned by is how much stuff I have in my head about Chicago politics. For instance, Common was up there. He was introduced to players, the great rap star from the south side of Chicago. His mother was on the school board. Rahm appointed her to the school board. She was a big charter school advocate. I was like, that's what I was thinking about. A Chance the Rapper supported Amara Enya in the last mayoral race. He's up there rapping. That's what I could think about. Donnie Trump, the trumpet player for Chance the Rapper. His dad, his old friend, Craig, there's your son. Anyway, that was what I did Sunday. Woke up today, and what did I discover? Breaking news, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, indeed. Donald John Trump, there were two breaking news. Donald John Trump has apparently commuted Governor Rod Blagojevich's sentence, and Rod's coming home. That's why I was singing Tie a Yellow Ribbon Around the Old Tree. And folks, I love this. I'm delighted by this news. I believe it actually happened. The first person who told me about it was Dr. D. He sent me a Facebook message that we got. And at that time, it was like, well, he's expected to commute the sentence. And now the New York Times has broken the news that he has actually commuted the sentence. And Brian was rushing in here, the Sun-Times IT guru, was saying that Blagojevich could be home as soon as tonight, that reporters and photographers are going out to his house, just like old days. Back when he was first arrested in 2008, they're going out to his house off of Wilson Avenue in the Ravenswood Manor area, not far from where young Dennis lives, by the way, about a half a block east of it. Excuse me, a half a mile east of it. Anyway, and they're going to surround and wait for what pearls of wisdom Blagojevich has to say. I love this on several levels. Number one, I've said all along, I thought it was an outrageously high sentence for the crime that he committed. 14 years is what he got. I believe he spent about 7 years in federal prison in Colorado.
Outrageous. Number one.
I hope there's a second reason. It was an outrageously high sentence, and it was largely a punishment for Rod Blagojevich because he gave two middle fingers high to the entire criminal justice system, if you will, here in Chicago, Cook County, the prosecutors, the judges, the whole notion that that they could dare to prosecute for him. He felt he was innocent, so he just acted bold and contemptuous of them all along, and they punished him for his behavior. So it really wasn't punishing him for the crime that he committed. They were punishing him for his behavior, and that behavior is norm with Donald Trump. Donald Trump is taking pages from the Rod Blagojevich playbook. And that's the other reason I like this. The utter hypocrisy of the Republican Party. For years and years and years, they cut their deals with Chicago Democrats, powerful Chicago Democrats like Mayor Richard Daley, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, Alderman Ed Burke. And then every now and then, to show that they were pure, they would throw like a sacrificial lamb. They would sacrifice a lamb like Rod Blagojevich. Not that he's innocent like a lamb, but then they would just fire themselves up with this just puffed up sense that they're reformers, that they're cleaning up corruption by going after Blago, when in fact it's the stuff that's legal that's outrageous. Like the Tribune today, great story by Hal Dardick about the Chicago TIF deal and how the whole thing is rigged to justify giving them the TIF even before they've got it. So you might want to read that story. That's the legal stuff in the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois that happens with bipartisan support, big-time Democrats, big-time Republicans, and then they'll take some guy like Blago, or they'll take some guy like Marty Sandoval, or they'll take some guy like Louis Arroyo, some petty crimes, some handoffs. I'm not justifying the crimes. I'm just saying, in relation to the ongoing stuff that's legal, I don't even think it's as bad as the stuff like the TIF deals that go out to big-time developers that don't need it. Anyway, they make such a big deal. Oh, the corrupt Democratic Party. How do we clean up corruption? They're always going after Madigan. So I love it, man. What's the Tribune going to do now? Tribune Chicago, the editorial board of the Chicago Tribune has been going after Blago for, what, 10 years, 12 years? You know, he's been like, oh, Blago is the reason everything's bad in the state of Illinois. And then they shifted gears. They try to stick Blago, the Blago controversy on Pritzker in order to reelect Bruce Rauner. You remember that? The tapes between Blago and Pritzker. Remember how they were trying to puff that up like there was something wrong with Pritzker because they had these tape calls? It's a selective leaking of the tape calls. That was a very interesting how all of a sudden the Tribune was leaking these calls. Didn't work. Why didn't work? Because Donald John Trump cut him off at the knees by talking about commuting Blagojevich's sentence. And so all of a sudden, those MAGA hatters in Illinois, they just follow the command of the leader. You know, for years, they were led to believe that Blagojevich is the symbol of all that's evil and corrupt in the state of Illinois. And now their leader, their fearless leader, Donald Trump, is telling them, no. Blago was railroaded by the same federal prosecutors who were railroading me, Donald John Trump. So now the MAGA hatters are having to shift on a dime. Oh, my God. Well, the president says that Blago was railroaded. I got to go with the president. So I'm just really going to get a kick out of reading the Tribune tomorrow because on one hand, they want to be outraged and shocked that Blago would be released from prison before he served his full 14 years. On the other hand, they're kind of MAGA hat wearers themselves. Remember their whole attitude about Trump and the phone call with the Ukraine president? Well, you know, one hand, some people said it was a quid pro quo. On the other hand, well, Trump says it wasn't. So I don't know. We'll just pass it along and go on with our business and pretend it didn't happen. Yeah, they don't want to alienate Donald Trump either. So I'm just going to love watching them squirm the hypocrisy of the Republican Party in the state of Illinois, where they pretend like the corruption is the stuff that petty corruption that Democrats do. Big time corruption happens all along. All by handouts to powerful corporations. They're all part of the deal to get Amazon to come to Chicago. Amazon didn't need that money. You tell me, taxpayers, what's more corrupt? Given what? Over $2 billion to the world's richest company that they don't need so that they could build in an area that's already gentrifying? Or what? Rob Blagojevich on the phone trying to cut a deal with the Obama administration to swap something for him appointing a replacement to Obama for Senate. So come on. We all know the hypocrisy that's going on. I really get a kick out of listening to the Republicans try to spin their way out of this one. The other breaking news, not as significant in our little universe of Illinois and Chicago, but pretty significant, to quote Larry David.
Oh, you're still watching Curb Your Enthusiasm,
yes,
huh?
Very good. By the way, you notice I'm wearing my red hat today?
Yeah, the one that looks like a MAGA hat.
Yeah, in honor of Trump for
Jesus Christ. And that's our last Ben Jarofsky show.
In honor of Trump for commuting blagos. I'm wearing the red hat. Anyway, this one, I love this one. Broke at the same time. I'm going to call it up. It was in the New York Times. It probably is not going to get nearly the play here in Illinois and Chicago that the Blago one is. Bloomberg surges in poll and qualifies for next Democratic debate. Michael Bloomberg will appear on stage with his rivals for the first time on Wednesday night after a national poll showed him with 19% of the vote. 19% of the vote. The Democrats are following the Terry Cosgrove adage. Put your big boy pants on and go with the billionaire. Go with the guy who can pay for the campaign. I've got mixed feelings about this. Yes, I am of the Bernie persuasion. Yeah, everybody knows that. I'm a Bernie guy. I supported Bernie in 2016. I support him now. On the other hand, I've been saying all along, if I were a moderate centrist Democrat, which I'm not, but if I were, I would go with Bloomberg. Because if you're a moderate centrist Democrat, really, like, you don't really have an ideology. You don't have a world. You have a general opinion, you know, like general opinions about what you believe in, but you don't want to take too strong of a stand because you're worried about alienating the next group. So you kind of like always trying to find some even position, middle of the road position that will sail through. So, you know, you go with Bloomberg. Yeah, so he was a Republican, you know, when the century began. Yeah, okay, so he endorsed George W. Bush. Yeah, okay, so he's for stop and frisk. Yeah, okay, so he said some outrageous things about women. Yeah, okay, but did I tell you he's got $59, $60 billion and he can self-finance his campaign and pay for nonstop commercials and Facebook ads? Man, Democrats aren't stupid. They're like, you know, I think I'll go with that guy. I think I'll go with Bloomberg. He's at 19%. So it'll be really interesting. We're going to be following this one, folks. It'll be really interesting. Can Bloomberg make any kind of a pivot that convinces people like me or Dr. D or many of our Miles Conflassen? I'm thinking of all the Maya who'll be coming in here 1:30. Can he possibly make some sort of a pivot that would win us over? Obviously, he's not going to win us over in the primary, but can he keep the Bernie supporters supporting the Democratic Party even if he's the head? Can, by the way, the Democrats avoid a huge floor fight at the convention, a brokered convention? I don't know, man, but I'll tell you what. It looks as though all those centrists have been taking my advice, D. You know, remember, you know who must feel bad about all this? Pete Buttigieg. You know, it's like all the time, but people are like, oh, he's such a young, earnest man. I like his voice. He's really good at the debates. Oh, suddenly, they're stampeding away from Buttigieg. How about Amy Klobuchar? Man, Bill Maher. Whoa, Bill Maher, remember how he was talking up Amy Klobuchar?
I love Klobuchar, people. Okay.
And you ditching her, but
okay, can't people. Me. Bloomberg, okay.
What do they say about the first of dessert, the last of dessert, a sinking ship? Anyway.
I love desserts.
It looks like they're all running to Bloomberg as I kind of knew they would. We got a great show today, everybody. We're talking politics. Oh, my goodness. Maya will be here. She's probably going to be walking in about 10 minutes. I know she's going to have a lot to say about Blago and Bloomberg and our March 3rd appearance at Promontory. Man, that's going to be a fun night. It'll be a Super Tuesday. That'll be the first night that Bloomberg's in the race, so we'll get a sense of how much support he's actually getting at the polls. Maya will be here. Justin Horowitz will be here, political guru. He's ready. I already talked to him. Man, he's so fired up about the Blago and Bloomberg. He's a Bernie guy, D. I don't know if you know that. He's a Bernie guy. So it'll be interesting what his thoughts are about Bloomberg making his inroads. Jimmy Battles, we're going to take a little break from politics in the last 15 minutes of the show. Do a little Mardi Gras talk. I guess there's going to be food here in the studio. Dr. D is real excited about that.
You're kidding me. Food?
Yep. Yes, indeed. Right. Denise O'Neill will be here to help us eat the food and talk about Mardi Gras. So plenty of talk ahead, a lot of political talk. But before we do any of that, the young man from Alton, the man they call Dr. Doobie, with the news.
everybody, how's it going? Live stream chat room. I don't know what's going on with the video. It seems like you guys are fine with it, though. You can listen to the show and look at that little logo we got there. Ben laughing and me looking like a goofball. So enjoy. I'll try and fix it as today's show rolls along, all right?
So if you can't see it, I'm wearing my red hat, my red Bulls hat in honor of Donald
Bulls
Trump.
Bulls hat. Not MAGA hat.
No, not MAGA hat. But it's in honor of Trump commuting a Blago sentence.
All right, let's find out what's happening in Chicago and or Illinois this afternoon. Well, it was a slow news day until about 11:45. Mark your calendars, people. February 18th, 2020, the day Donald Trump finally did something decent.
That's correct.
ABC News has reported that President Donald Trump is expected to commute in prison former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich's 14-year prison sentence. The timing of Blagojevich's actual release from prison is not certain, but the process is expected to move quickly. So quickly, in fact, that I think he's out by now, right?
Well, it says Trump grants clemency to three white-collar criminals and ex-governor, so he already did it.
He was a good contestant on that show. I loved him.
Best decision you ever made, Blago, going on that stupid show, huh?
Yes, that was a good decision.
Prior to presidential action, Blagojevich was looking at a release date of May 2024. Shout out to our friends currently watching or listening over on the Ben Jarofsky Show live stream chat. Live stream chat, what's going on? We got Sage Unknown. He's a new live stream chatter on the program. What's happening, Sage? Ro, Brianna, Bruce, all of you. I'm going to pose a question to you, and we'll try and read your responses at the end of this segment or throughout today's program. Here's the question. What's the first thing Rod Blagojevich does after being released? What's the first thing? I say he's getting some of that recreational legalized reefer.
Well, it's legal in Colorado.
Either that or he's going to Arby's ASAP.
I think you're right about the reefer. In Colorado, they were way ahead of the game. By the way, can we give a shout out to Pat Rod?
Yeah.
He was the one who broke the story in our little universe.
You're the man, Pat Rod. Thank you.
Pat Rod sent a image of a, Channel 7? Was it breaking news?
Yep.
And he put that on Facebook. Dr. D sent it to me. I immediately sent it out to like everybody, every political junkie I know, and I know a lot of political junkies. And none of them knew about it. So Pat Rod, you broke the news. Mark Sims says he's going to hop in his car, drive out to Colorado, pick up Blagojevich himself and drive him back to Illinois.
What's the first thing he does, everybody?
He's going to have a press conference. He loves press conferences, ladies and gentlemen.
He's going to be jacked, probably lifting weights and stuff there in jail.
I never thought about it. He was running. I saw there was a picture of him.
Yeah.
Ridiculous 14 years. Give me a break. God dang. First thing Trump's done I've ever agreed with.
All right, from Illinois governor's past to present. No public event scheduled for Governor Jebediah Bartholomew Pritzker. I think it's John Robert.
No, but that's funny.
No public event scheduled, but we've now settled into 2020 here in Illinois, and I think it's safe to say that the days of getting absolutely nothing accomplished are behind us.
Yay for our teachers! Yay for our teachers!
Bruce Rauner,
yeah, thanks for nothing, Bruce Rauner.
Tribune's favorite governor.
Legalized recreational cannabis has become a reality. It's been pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
We're at least trying to put a stop to all that damn dirty corruption in Illinois. More on that in moments. And by God, we have quite possibly the best 2020 State Fair summer concert lineup in the country, featuring LL Cool J, Toby Keith, and Puddle of Mud. But what about the 2020 Illinois state budget? On Wednesday, the governor will deliver his budget address to the public, and thanks to the Chicago Sun-Times and one Tina Sfondella as well, we got a little sneak peek preview of what to expect. Mm-hmm. Sfondella's writes, or types, Governor J.B. Pritzker's second-year budget will include a $147 million increase in funding for the Department of Children and Family Services to boost staffing and increase support for investigations. The governor also plans to increase the agency's headcount to 3,056 employees, up from 2,758 employed in 2018. That's intended to reduce caseloads for overwhelmed investigations and to boost staffing at a hotline set up to receive calls about cases of child abuse and neglect. Pritzker's budget also proposes funding a third simulation lab in Illinois to help train investigators on finding signs of abuse and neglect.
Yeah, that's good. Good releasing, selective releasing of information by the Pritzker. They know how to play the game. right? So there's a budget coming down. It's, you know, they want to make sure that they're on top of all the issues. So they figure out what's the best issue to lead with, you know, DCFS. But can I just go back to Blago for a moment? Can I just, I know we're.
I got a feeling it's going to happen a lot today. So just go ahead.
I just listening, you know, to, okay, let me back up. Just listen to your story about how Pritzker operates. He's a far better governor, obviously, than Rauner, who's a complete and utter failure as a governor, who used his position of power to try to destroy collective bargaining rights in Illinois and failed, was cheered on by like this extreme right wing, like the Chicago Tribune's editorial board and various other, you know, Republican funded think tanks, etc. But even Blago. Blago was sort of a wacky governor, you know what I mean? In many, he really was Trump before Trump. He just, he tried it to, he did, the huge disadvantage he had over what Trump has is that he, Blago, did not have direct access to the people the way Trump does with Twitter. Blago, there was no Twitter back in the Blago days. And so he had to rely on the media to help him broadcast his message, and the media couldn't stand him. I can tell you that for personal. I didn't like the guy either, although I did believe the 14 years was outrageous. I've said it a million
times.
Watch
your hands on that desk.
Oh, God, I'm feeling so excited about this, feeling my inner Sergio Mims. So I... when I listen to, I watch how Pritzker still operates as though we're in a pre-Trump era where there's a game you sort of play by the official rules. Well, we've studied the budget. This is our preliminary budget. This is what we're going to be addressing. You selectively release bits and pieces of it so you get positive press. And then you give a speech where you try to appeal as a bipartisan leader of the state that you're interested in the Republican view, you're interested in the Democratic view. This is not how the game is really played in politics today. It's like politics today, it's just like Coliseum, and it's the Christians versus the lions. You know, it's like people fighting for survival. Donald Trump, it's very much a partisan game. You attack anybody that dares to disagree with you. There is no working across the aisle. So it's interesting that J.B. Pritzker is sort of playing by rules that existed before Trump and existed before Blagojevich in the state of Illinois. These are the old school rules. Former Governor Pat Quinn, good friend of the show, he also played by those rules.
PQ, what's up?
He played by those rules, and that's why I always said, Pat, you're playing by these rules. The other side's not playing by these rules, so you ended up getting played. So what's interesting, J.B. Pritzker is still pretending as though we have bipartisan spirit in the state of Illinois and the politics in this country. Good God, if he signs onto a fair map proposal, that'll be a true sign of insanity. I hope he doesn't do that. But anyway, interesting when I hear you read that story and talk about the calm approach of Pritzker, like he's, you know, measured statements and views of the world. And then I contrast it to Donald Trump and how he runs the White House. It's almost as though there are two different political universes.
Yeah, J.B. Pritzker, in year two of being Illinois governor, we've come to learn with J.B. Pritzker that you can take the big feller out of the city, but you can't take the city out of the big feller, because when the governor has no public events scheduled, there's a good chance he's in Chicago. But I really hope he's hanging at the governor's mansion in Springfield today, because if so, he could spend a little time with our Chicago mayor.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine.
Yes, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot is at the state capitol this afternoon. Why? Well, if at first you don't succeed, try again, Ben Jarofsky. It's round two of trying to convince the Illinois lawmakers to consider lowering the tax rates on a Chicago casino, because according to Lightfoot, if the tax rates aren't lowered, then big gambling companies won't bid on operating a casino in Chicago.
Yeah, so in other words, won't make enough money from the suckers and saps who gamble and throw away their money, because, guys, it's a losing proposition. That's why they have gambling casinos, because it's set up so you lose. But so anyway, they're not going to make enough money. They got to give them a bigger take. Well, it's always, I've been saying this all along, who's going to lose? So some rich head of the gambling casino wins. Is it the state? Is it the city? Are they going to split it down the middle? So they set up the rules one way that was to be give it a third, the city, the state, and the casino ruler. Then Lori Lightfoot suddenly said it's not enough money for the casino operators. We need to cut back the amount the city or the state or both take. I would like to see the go out for bids. Let's see. Let's see. What, you tell me nobody wants in on this lucrative contract? Nobody? Or is it just, is there somebody already in the mix who said, I want a bigger stake? I don't know. It's a hard thing to sell. This is what I'm saying, folks. It's like the legal stuff that we just accept and tolerate, like front page of the Tribune story in the TIF deal where Sterling Bay wrote the TIF report, Suckers and Saps in Chicago. Well, city says it deserves it. Turns out the report was written by Sterling Bay. And now we have a situation where we're going to take a little of the money that's Suckers and Saps who gamble are going to give to the casino, to the state and the city, and give it to the owners. It's the stuff that legal that really bothers me more than Rob Blagojevich on the phone trying to cut a deal with the Obama people on who replaces Obama as senator.
All right. And finally, corruption. Apparently, two other states do it better than Illinois, but no city does it better than Chicago.
That's correct.
The following comes from Block Club Chicago. Hannah Alani, I may have butchered that last name, and Heather Sharon. According to a new report from the University of Illinois at Chicago, Chicago remains America's most corrupt city.
The author of that report, I believe, was Dick Simpson.
Well, you're... The report, co-authored by UIC professor and former alderman Dick Simpson, Mr. Impatient over here.
Who's impossible to get a hold of. I am really busy.
It's based on...
He always tells me that, too.
I'm so busy.
Every time I interview Dick Simpson, he always starts off the conversation by telling me how busy he is.
I'm really busy. In other words, let's harumph, get this conversation over with fast. Okay, I'm going to talk really fast with my questions.
Here's the quote from Simpson. The quote from Simpson. Quote, our study shows that Chicago remains the most corrupt city in the United States with 1,750 total public corruption convictions from 1976 through 2018. This number is even more troubling when compared to the second place city, Los Angeles, which has had 200 fewer convictions in that time period.
All right, so we counted convictions. I stand by what I said. The stuff that's really outrageous is the stuff that's perfectly legal, like front page of the Chicago Tribune. Let's give Hal Dardick credit. They come up with a TIF eligibility report. Guess who authored it? A bunch of experts, quote unquote, hired by the developers getting the money.
They say, watch your mouth, buddy. I think you're going to curse.
I guess that's totally legal, but somehow or other that's less corrupt than some knucklehead passing on a $5,000 bribe. Just saying, Maya. It's the legal stuff that really irritates me.
Illinois remains the third most corrupt state. We'll get to number one eventually. Right?
Wait, we're only number three?
Yeah, we're number three.
Okay, I cut you off again.
Well, I mean, I don't have that information, but I would assume New York and California? I don't know. It said Los Angeles on there.
I'm looking at Maya. I'm thinking, who's number one?
I mean, honestly, I feel like corruption in New York is really kind of child's play compared to the stuff that goes on here. So
I don't know, man. There's some weird stuff that goes down in New Jersey's no joke either.
Jersey's a corrupt place.
Yeah?
Jersey's a corrupt place.
I mean, they're all corrupt. I don't know, like, why Chicago acts like... I don't know if Chicago's any more corrupt than Cleveland. I'm just, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Just picking on Cleveland.
Our Cleveland listeners out there.
I'm just saying. I mean, you know, I don't study Cleveland. We're obsessed with petty corruption in the city of Chicago. Louis Arroyo passing on a bribe, you know what I'm saying? Or taking a bribe. So
you better get that story right.
Yeah, no, it's the taking, not the passing. Sorry, Louis. Really, what's the difference? But anyway... in terms of corruption, right? I don't know, man. Like Cincinnati, what makes you think Cincinnati's so pure? You know?
Illinois remains the third most corrupt state based on the formula that compares the number of each area's corruption convictions with its population, according to the report issued by Simpson and his students.
So what, they took the number of convictions and they made a ratio compared to the number of people who live in the... Why didn't I think of that? That's why he's so busy. He's thinking of things.
Yeah, man.
I'm busy.
He's busy with the important questions. But it doesn't say who the first and second ranked states are.
No, I can take a look and I'll see if I can find that when we come back.
All right, let's make a bet. I say number one is New York. I'm going to go with Dennis. I'm going to just go based on sheer population. I think all cities.
Los Angeles was the, you know, number
you're
two.
You're saying convictions per population.
Is that what the measure is? Convictions?
Yes.
Could be Louisiana.
Mm.
There's not a lot of people in Louisiana. It's pretty corrupt.
Or Texas.
But there's a lot of people in Texas. Oh man, this is the kind of gambling game that you lose your money at the casinos doing, trying to figure this
no
out.
No gambling on the
All
show.
All right, I say New York and Louisiana.
We'll keep you posted on these stories as today's program rolls along. We'll go to the live stream chat room real quick. Today's question on the live stream chat: what's the first thing Rod Blagojevich is going to do when being released from prison? Let's see here. Shout out to Alan. What's going on, Alan? Have you been on the live stream chat before? Are you new? What's going on? Alan says Blago is going to his beautician to get his hair dyed.
That's right. His hair's turned gray or white or whatever. So yeah.
Silver Fox. I say keep it undyed.
Charlie Fox.
All right. We got more. Weigh in. Let us know what you think Rod Blagojevich is going to do when released from prison. We'll be reading your comments throughout today's program. I mean, if it's not absurdly foul, we'll read it. And don't go anywhere. The Ben Jarofsky Show will be right back. Our Chicago Reader colleague Maya Duke-Masova is with us. It's the Ben Jarofsky Show live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Read the Chicago Reader to get up to speed on what's what in Chicago. Culture, food, arts and entertainment, weekly concert listings, weekly event listings, the environment, travel. I can continue, but you get the point. And for all of you Chicago political junkies, raw weekly columns on real city politics from Maya Duke-Masova and our very own Ben Jarofsky. The Chicago Reader, free to the public in newsstands throughout the city and online at chicagoreader.com. Read it now and be a more informed Chicagoan.
Commercial break over. Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Trump commuted Blago sentence. I'm really happy about that, folks. First thing Trump's done that I've liked. 14 years is ridiculous. And plus, the utter freaking hypocrisy, and I'll say this again and again, of the Republican Party in the state of Illinois, how they pretend as though they're cracking down on corruption when they look the other way at all the stuff that's quote-unquote legal, all right? And up to their eyebrows in politicians like Rahm, Daley, Ed Burke. Every now and then they get outraged at Blago. Yes, sir.
Shout out to Roe. He put on the live stream chat. Blago's going to hold a press conference as soon as he's out, praising Trump to the heavens and denouncing the Democratic candidates. That's part of the deal.
That is part of the deal. Yes. Yes. It's exactly what he's going to do. And now, having said all this, my beloved Democratic voters in the state of Illinois, my beloved Democratic voters throughout the country, if you're so stupid as to vote for Donald John Trump because he commuted Rod Blagojevich's sentence, you should give up your voting rights. That's all I'm saying, all right? This is an inside deal. You're right. You know what? And Dennis pointed out, I had forgotten this, Maya, that Blago was a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice. So you know how Trump's universe is. Oh, he's a good guy. He was on my show, you know? And all right, but this is what I really want to talk about.
Okay.
The breaking news about Blago is the big breaking news in Illinois and Chicago, yes. But the big breaking news outside of Illinois and Chicago is that Michael Bloomberg surges in poll and qualifies for Democratic debate in Vegas. That's this Wednesday's debate. After garnering 19%, Maya, 19% support in a national poll, the billionaire will be on the debate stage where he is certain to be a target of onstage criticism.
Can the Joe Biden campaign even spell 19%?
Ooh, dang.
It's wild. 19%.
19% is no joke. Bernie is number one with 31% in the latest poll. And let's see, it's just all sort of divided from there. The debate will be this Wednesday at 8 o'clock. It'll be on NBC News, MSNBC. I'm not feeling MSNBC these days, Maya. I just got to tell you that.
Neither am I. I no longer have any access to their programming. I don't have cable. I don't have any kind of apps that I'm signed up for that would allow me to watch it. So really not feeling anything with regards to MSNBC anymore.
Well, so you're not feeling because you don't have access to them. I never had access to them. But last week we were just... Their anti-Bernie tilt.
Even Rachel Maddow? She's got an anti-Bernie tilt?
Well, you know what? I should amend. I should keep Rachel Maddow out of the conversation because
yeah,
I don't watch. No, I don't watch her show.
Keep Rachel out of this.
Now we're throwing them all under the bus.
But, you know, I just watch their post-New Hampshire coverage, their post-Iowa coverage. This is the stuff I watch on the internet. I'm like, are you kidding me? You're the liberals. Like, you're supposed to pretend you're the liberals or the lefties, whatever they are. You got to at least pretend that you care about the Bernie people and the party. He's 30% of the party. Mm-hmm. They act as though like it's this radical fringe that's corrupting the real Democratic Party. Do you come on? He's 30%, 31%. There, everybody's talking about. We're talking about Bloomie with his 19, but Bernie is 31%. So yeah. I got my issues with MSNBC on that one.
Yeah. It's this Michael Bloomberg thing is getting serious. It's getting serious. Like I was listening to the today's episode of The Daily, which was all about his candidacy and the way that he's financed this campaign and kind of the way he's developed an enormous amount of political influence in the country, not through campaign donations and support for particular politicians, but through his philanthropy. Every single kind of liberal, left-leaning, center-left nonprofit in the country, whether it's about, you know, public health issues, guns, all of that stuff, they receive a lot of money from Michael Bloomberg. And there was this incredible moment that the reporter in the episode describes of Michael Bloomberg coming to Washington to have a meeting with a bunch of moderate congresspeople. Usually in these situations, when there's some kind of power broker, people, you know, approach the conversation as sort of like, well, what are you going to do for me if I support this or that thing for you? The conversation that people were having with Michael Bloomberg began with, and this was based on two sources who were at this meeting, according to the reporter, who both described it in this way. As people went around the table introducing themselves, all of them began their statements by thanking Michael Bloomberg for everything he had already done for them through his philanthropic activities related to issues that were important to them. So it's really hard to imagine him energizing voters the way that, say, Obama did, right? It's hard to imagine Michael Bloomberg being the reason for a big, an unusual turnout. That clearly seems to be more of something that Bernie would be able to accomplish. But so far, the turnout in Iowa and New Hampshire, from what I understand, has not been record-breaking.
New Hampshire was... Oh, Iowa was down, New Hampshire was up.
Up more than last time, or up, like, record-breaking up?
Well, record-breaking, I don't know. It was up more than last time. I don't know if it was record-breaking, so I don't know. I just read about this, and I'm looking for the exact total, but I can't find it here. Anyway.
I think, basically, if the turnout situation is not going to vastly improve, if we're not going to see, like, start to see, like, really huge upticks in turnout around the country, then the kind of reliable voters, the people who everyone is obsessed with flipping, et cetera, like, a lot of those people are, I think, going to be pretty swayable for Bloomberg. They're going to be pretty, it's going to be possible to capture those votes.
Well, I could tell
you, I don't think he's a candidate that's going to really mobilize people who don't normally vote. But I think he is a kind of candidate that's going to be attractive to the Mayor Pete Klobuchar, Biden axis.
Yeah. He's already stealing their votes.
What the Lakefront Liberals, Ben?
Yes.
The Chicago Lakefront Liberals.
Yes.
They'll vote for Michael Bloomberg.
They love Michael Bloomberg.
They'll vote for him over Mayor Pete. Some of them.
Oh, my God. They've already thrown Mayor Pete out the window. Are you kidding? Sorry, Mayor Pete.
Oh, we actually have a quote from Bloomberg on his recent jump in the polls. Oh, wait. It's just the sound of money. No words.
So here's the deal. Our show, we have a lot of Bernie people come to this show. We have a lot of Bernie listeners on our show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Maya has officially declared who she's voting for, but I know the spirit of Maya is very Bernie, okay? Whether she wants to admit it or not. And
listen, the Chicago Reader can't have two political columnists. You do understand
okay,
that, right?
That's fine. But I'm just talking
I really need to keep this job, Ben.
Okay. But I'm just telling you the spirit that emanates from you, okay? When you're just not thinking about things and you're just being Maya, you know, going on a
when I'm not thinking about things, okay.
Know, the consequences of what you're saying and you're just riffing like Hendrix on guitar. That's like, wow, all of a sudden the headphones are really popping. I like it, man. Good job.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, the spirit of Bernie is very strong in this show. All right, let's be. And
animated by the spirit.
Yeah. So I know Bernie supporters. They're not, to put it mildly, in any way enticed by Bloomberg. And so I'm telling Michael Bloomberg's people are essentially in this city, in this state, Maya, the same crowd that elected Rahm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And their attitude toward Bernie supporters is F them. We don't need them. We can win without them. Just shut up, get in line. And, you know, we don't care if you're mad at us. In fact, we'll use your being mad at us as a way to win over lakefront liberals.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've existed in this world. They're not winning this election against Donald John Trump without Bernie support. If Bloomberg is able to capture this nomination, I'm not conceding anything on this point. I think it's a wide open race still. Bernie's still ahead, 31-19, even with all the commercials in the latest poll. But let's say Bloomie is the nominee. You can't treat Bernie supporters with the utter disdain that Rahm treats lefties, or that Rahm treats the Chicago Teachers Union, or even that Lori treats the Chicago Teachers Union. You cannot treat people on the left like, you know, they're dust. You know what I mean? They're dandruff on your show. You just brush them off. You have to appeal to Bernie supporters somehow. I don't know how the heck Mike Bloomberg, with his record. I just did a story for the Reader on this point, going through his record. It's pretty atrocious if you're a lefty. And so I don't know how they're going to do that pivot. I'm not, if he is the nominee,
mm-hmm.
I think it's going to have to start at the convention, because there's probably going to be a fierce fight. There could be a brokered convention, Amaya. And so I don't,
like a fractured convention, like what they thought might happen at the RNC when Trump was nominated.
Yes, we had Maggie Wonderly on, a Bernie Sanders delegate extraordinaire. We should bring her to one of our shows. She knows the rules inside and out. Mm-hmm. She was explaining the rules. Maggie Wonderly from Kane County, a Bernie delegate who spent 4 years, okay, in the rooms where they were discussing rules and arguing among themselves, the Democrats, different factions with the mm-hmm. Democrats. Now here comes Bloomie, boom, with 19, with all his billions. He's not 19%, so he bypasses the rule they set up about fundraising ability. They changed the rule to allow him on the debate stage. So mm-hmm. anyway, I was talking to her, and it could very well be a brokered convention, at which point all the delegates are free to vote for whoever they want at the convention floor. And there's just this incredible wheeling and dealing in Milwaukee, you know, behind the scenes, Lord knows what's being promised and et cetera. I don't know what Bloomberg can say or do to win over Bernie voters. I don't know. Do you think it's possible?
No, but I think that what is possible is like, he's not going to win over Bernie voters, but Bernie voters may be demoralized enough to, I mean, the at the end of the day, your question is about whether or not what he's going to do to win over Bernie people for the nomination.
Mm-hmm.
He'll focus his energy on everything else except for them. And later on down the line, the question is, will Bernie voters turn out to vote for Bloomberg? And I think a lot of them will not. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but
no. I think that as it now stands, and again, we're in February, so we have a long way to go on this thing. But as it now stands, I do not believe a significant number of Bernie supporters will support Michael Bloomberg.
No, they won't.
They won't, and they'll stay at home. And so Michael Bloomberg.
And well, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say Michael Bloomberg will have to come up with a new combination to win. And I don't know if that combination is out there.
And you don't think he can win without them?
I do not believe that 31% Right now, they're at 31%, or a third of the party.
Mm-hmm.
And see, this is what mainstream centrist Dems, they have such disdain for the Bernie crowd. But the Bernie crowd is now 30%, at least, of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And I've never seen an attempt by mainstream Dems to win over the Democrats. You should hear the stuff they tell me off the record, how much they hate the Bernie, how much they hate Bernie, how much they hate his supporters. You get what I'm saying? I don't know what they're going to do to win over Bernie supporters. And so part of me thinks, you know, if they follow the Rahm strategy, you know how Rahm ran for re-election in this city. He didn't care about the people that read your stories. You know what I'm saying? The people that are outraged by the things that you wrote about. You didn't care about them. Mm-hmm. You wrote them off.
Take a chill pill, man.
Oh, sorry, Rahm. And these are the same people, like I said, essentially running Bloomberg's campaign. This is how Bloomberg ran in New York.
Yeah.
I mean, Rahm followed the playbook that Bloomberg wrote. And Bloomberg came before Rahm.
Yeah. It's kind of bleak. I guess I'm feeling kind of low energy about this whole situation because it's just something that, I don't know. I feel like there's some kind of... It feels like some kind of an inevitability is creeping in with this Bloomberg candidacy. Like, this is exactly what would happen. This is like kind of the historical precedent is not on the side of some kind of real huge swing to the left happening in these present circumstances. Like, This is, I don't know. I feel like this is the time when oligarchs and plutocrats are going to continue to gain ground. And the thing is that it's not about Bernie not doing enough or there not being enough supporters or not that message not resonating enough. It's not about that. It's about the combination of, I mean, the amount of money around Michael Bloomberg is... It's just unfathomable to most people. Like it's like people don't even know where his money comes from. Like people don't understand how integral this person and his company is to like the way global capitalism runs. Like this person created something without which the current financial like kind of world order could not exist. So. The politics, everything else, the philanthropy that comes out of that, the policy, whatever, it all just trickles down from this like source, this like much deeper source of power and money. And I don't know, I just that combined with the ongoing foreign interference from Russia and maybe elsewhere, and that long, decades-long process of voter disenfranchisement, suppression, and gerrymandering. Like the cocktail is just like, you know, like the level of turnout needed to counteract those forces is like monumental.
Yeah.
Much bigger than for Obama, you know? And the odds that, you know, somebody like Bernie is facing now with getting that turnout are much steeper. The road is much steeper than it was for Obama to get that turnout. So we need more, you need more, and it's harder to get it. Yeah. So, I don't know. And the question also that was discussed on this episode of The Daily today was also the inroads Bloomberg has made in the Black community and the degree to which, like how the process by which he's doing reputation management and reputation repair, despite the stop and frisk, despite the like tremendously Islamophobic policies he had in New York City, with like mosque raids and all of that stuff. He's like, I don't know. I wonder what Brandon Johnson would think about this, but I think that a lot of There's reason to believe he could be much more successful gaining traction among established, reliable, likely voters in the Black community than Bernie when it comes to capturing the Biden people, you know? the Biden voters in the black community. So I don't know.
Well, this is where I must.
He's doing a lot of work there. Yeah. And he's got so much money that he's funneled into so much municipal politics. Like Michael Bloomberg's money is getting school board candidates elected in California and in other places. Like like the amount of money he's funneled into the Bay Area politics is like off the charts. Yeah. This octopus is like literally so big you can't even see all parts of it at once, you know? So I don't know. And nobody wants to touch anything that might jeopardize the cash flow from him to their issues. So this, you know, you asked me when we were talking on the phone beforehand about, you know, the sexual harassment stuff that's come out. I mean, it made no difference with the Trump base, but like this is, if people were jaded and disappointed and outraged and shocked about how little difference it made for Trump, for this stuff to come out, that people really didn't care about this stuff, and voted for him anyway, that's like, you know, I feel like it was a moment where a lot of, especially, you know, liberal people in this country were like, wow, people in this country really hate women. Like, yeah, but this will be like an even starker relief with Bloomberg, because it's not even just like voters in this country hate women. It's the fact that like all these Emily's List, all of these organizations that are about female empowerment, about getting women elected, about gun control, about mothers and children, they are going to not jeopardize their cash flow for Michael Bloomberg. You're not going to hear them out there denouncing. You're not going to hear Emily's List announcing Bloomberg, because something like 17 of the 23 candidates that he helped elect in 2018 were women. It's like, there's just no uncompromised position for these giant organizations. Every Town, you know, these massive, massive, massive liberal organizations. That's when you get to, like, that's when you'll see what's actually far more outrageous than, like, the kind of ingrained interpersonal toxic masculinity that allows, like, a bunch of women to stand up and say, we don't care what Trump, you know, who he sexually assaulted or what kind of things he said on that bus and whatever. Like, this is institutional affirmation that really all of this stuff doesn't matter. Yeah, I mean, again, none of this should be shocking at all. But I don't think that this country, in a sort of historical context in where we are right now, is gonna. I don't know if there's enough fervor to revolt against this in this moment. The things that potentiate revolutions, and I'm talking about like real revolutions, not like, you know, let's have a system that's like more like Germany or Sweden, you know. Like at the end of the day, Bernie, you know, just like social democratic kind of principles, this is pretty basic stuff. Like this is not revolutionary by any stretch of the imagination, however you might want to brand it as the Bernie campaign. That's not revolutionary. This country has moved leftwards in the wake of massive like ontological crises, like Great Depression. You know, there was a brief moment after the Civil War, you know, Reconstruction period, there was some, you know, some brief movement leftwards, and then, you know, after the Great Depression, and even that was like severely compromised. Like this, nothing here, like just nothing there hasn't been a sufficiently large crisis here for Michael Bloomberg to like no longer matter, for Michael Bloomberg to be like, unsuccessful in his endeavor. Like, I really struggle to imagine what might happen that would derail his candidacy.
Well, derail his candidacy to win the Democratic nomination. Not you, defeating Donald Trump is a whole other ballgame. But to get the, you're talking about to get the Democratic nomination. And, man, that was a great Meyer riff, by
yeah,
the way.
This
we,
is...
we talk about Meyer riffs. Remember I told you, you never know that lefty side of her is going to come out. But when I was listening to the couple things that you said, one point I got to give a shout out to David Seaton, who's been a guest on this show, and he was he's a very much of a centrist, and he's a talk show host with a T. Boo Buchanan on WVON, and his he debated a Bernie Sanders supporter on the show. It was a very interesting debate, and what Seaton was saying about the black community and the black vote, he was saying by and large, it's a very pragmatic, practical voter, particularly the older black voters. And they're going to go with the person that they think has the best chance of winning. And when you were talking about the shift that you're seeing already in polls from away from Biden by black voters, and I have to smile about it because at first when Biden was getting that support, I would listen to voters saying, well, you know, he was with Barack Obama and he stood by him, so I got loyalty. And, well, open window, throw out loyalty. Michael Bloomberg's the new pretty face on the block. He's got the money. Practical voters. I think that just speaks to a certain amount of quote unquote practicality. Like, who can win? Money wins. Let's not kid ourselves. This is the system that we have. It's a system driven by money and ability to control the internet and ability to control the message that you see in the boob tube. And so voters, they follow the game and they know what the game is.
Money wins when you don't have the id harnessed. Like, Donald Trump, let's remember, was not the money candidate, not compared to Hillary Clinton. But he harnessed a kind of he harnessed the id. He harnessed populism, you know. He harnessed the kind of energy that people went out there not with the thought of like, who can I vote for that's most likely to win? Or, you know, this is like interviews with people in Iowa about who were they were in caucus for. Like, who do other people like? Who do I vote for that other people like? That is the exact opposite of the energy on which Trump won this election. Yeah. Like, that is totally the opposite thing from what got that guy elected. Mm-hmm. What got that guy elected is a lot of people going out there and saying, fuck it. I'm voting for the guy who's saying the stuff I'm only able to say in my head. And I feel uncomfortable living in this country, not being able to say it out loud. And this guy makes it okay for me to say it out loud. So I'm going to vote for this guy. You know, like that, you can't, like, the money can beat that. But I think in a context of like pretty intense voter suppression, pretty intense, like just general level of apathy, lack of energy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because to be, in that context, in order for money not to win, you need something that harnesses these kind of more, this kind of excitement and energy on a personal level that's like way more intense than anything Michael Bloomberg can generate in people.
All right, our next guest, Justin Horwitz, is on deck. He's ready to talk. We got the three Bs. Dennis, I can't believe you didn't think of this. You're Mr. Alliteration. Bernie, Bloomberg, and Blago. Three Bs.
Holy Lord.
Yeah, man. Whoa. And the third one, Reefer. Oh, wait, that's not a B. Anyway, he'll be talking about Bernie, Blago, and Bloomberg. Can the people beat the money in the Democratic primary? We're going to talk to Justin Horwitz about that. Before we let Maya go, Maya, let's promote. March 3rd.
March 3rd, our first Tuesday's roadshow. Everyone should come through with the Promontory in Hyde Park at 6 o'clock. We're going to have some very special guests discussing the Super Tuesday. We're going to have it's a pre-Super Tuesday event, panel discussion. You want to...
Yeah, I'm just going to say I'm so excited. We got Jeanette Taylor, the alderwoman of the 20th Ward, and she's with Bernie. We got Delmarie Cobb, the legendary political strategist, both frequent guests on our show. Delmarie is a Hillary Clinton supporter. So we're going to have a wide range.
And we have Kofi Adamola, who is an organizer, super progressive, lefty, organizer, co-founder of a bunch of organizations that are doing abolitionist work in the city. So we've got a real left perspective
Holy
as well.
Cow. This sounds amazing. When is it?
Yeah. March 3rd.
Where?
6 p.m. at the Promontory in Hyde Park. And it's free.
Free?
Whoa. All of our
free?
Free 99 for all of our beloved audience members who usually show up at the Hideout. You know, I don't know what kind of commute people do to get there, but hopefully it's an enticement to come join us in Hyde Park because, you know, that's $5. You don't have to pay it to see us that night.
Yeah, it's free. And Dr. D will be there signing autographs.
Oh yeah. All two of you. Come on by. Maya, I just know you like this clip. We played it earlier. I don't think you were here.
Yay for our teachers. Yay for our teachers.
That governor of ours, Bruce Rauner.
Maybe Bruce Rauner is going to be there.
Oh, man. Maybe not. He'll be signing autographs.
Come on. Did you hear Bruce Rauner?
That's just a sound.
Movie. All right, Maya. Thank you very much. Justin Horwitz on deck. We're getting ready to talk 3Bs, Bernie, Blago, and Bloomberg. We'll be right back. Did you know that 40% of the people in Illinois opt to be cremated? Well, it's true. And Chicagoland Cremation Options honors their wishes by providing cremation services directly to the general public. Chicagoland Cremation Options provides an affordable, ethical, and easy cremation arrangement, whether in person or online. Save thousands and streamline the process by going directly to Chicagoland Cremation Options. It's a family-owned business operated by my good friend, Douglas Klein. Here's how you reach them. ChicagolandCremationOptions.com. One more time. ChicagolandCremationOptions.com.
How did you go from sharing stories over the years to deciding to write a book?
Good question, Mayor. Good question.
It's Chicagoland's adult entertainment playground. It's the world-famous Admiral Theater, 3940 West Lawrence Avenue. The Admiral is homegrown from Chicago, and it's the most conveniently located club in all of the city. 15 minutes from the O'Hare Airport in downtown Chicago Loop. Voted Chicago's best strip club, the Admiral has showgirls galore and a variety of adult entertainment shows. The world-famous Admiral Theater, open every day from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m., 3940 West Lawrence Avenue. For events, showtime, and other information, visit AdmiralX.com. Must be 18 years of age or older to enter.